I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Are you ready?
All right, the coach of the Washington football team, Ron Rivera, joining us a day earlier than usual this week because of the Thursday night game. You know, I've watched almost every one of your press conferences this week, and you've looked a little bit on edge compared to usual. Not that any loss sits right with you, but the loss to the Chargers really irked you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did because we had a chance to win, and we didn't play well. You know, I mean, that's a very good football team, and we were with them stride for stride on it until the until a couple of unfortunate things happened. But as you look at it, and, you know, you watch the tape, the thing that was really discouraging was just the lack of discipline and some of the things that happened. That's what was disappointing, and it was more, I think, Kevin, guys trying to do things that they don't need to do. You know, they got to trust their teammates are going to be where they're supposed to. They're going to trust those blocks are going to be made. They're going to trust that. Guys are going to be in their gaps of responsibility, you know, and that's what really I was disappointed because, you know, we got some really good football players that again, you know, just have to remember they don't have to make every play, just make the plays that are there.
Was there one play more than any other that really pissed you off?
No, I wouldn't say one play more than any other. It's just to have the mistakes repeated. And it wasn't by the same guy either. That's the thing that's also, you know, tough. Because everybody, at some point in time, we all made a mistake that we should not have made.
It's just that 3rd and 16 after you made the decision to punt and you've got them backed up and you're going to get the ball back. And 3rd and 16, that's a long shot conversion. That had to be deflating.
Well, that was disappointing more so than anything else because – you know, we got what we were looking for. We had them backed up. We had a chance to get the ball, and we just didn't execute properly. You know, it was one of those things that we talk about it during training camp, and that's being aware of situational football. And to not be aware in a situation like that of what the circumstances were, 3rd and long, you know, we want to keep it in front of us. We want to be able to come downhill and make the play. We want to, you know, get in the quarterback's vision, that type of stuff. And unfortunately, we didn't do it. We weren't disciplined at probably the one time when we really needed it. But, you know, again, that's not the one reason you lose. You know, several things had to happen for us to be in that position.
Yeah, but you just spelled it out, the situational football. 3rd and 16, you got to get the ball back. That ball's got to be checked down short of the sticks, and everybody gets up and makes the tackle, and you send your punt returner out there in most cases. You know, you talked to me, and this will be the last one about last week because I want to get to the game tonight. You talked to me last week about maturity being your biggest concern.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're talking about, that the team lacked maturity last week?
Yes, that's part of it. That's part of what, you know, you worry about because guys get so hyped up, so fired up, and you know you've got to be able to take a deep breath and then go out and and function and execute. And I think we were so hyped early on that we kind of took us a little bit to settle down. Then we settled down, started rolling, and then something would happen, and then somebody would try to make a play. You know, you how you handle, how you respond to things, that's what to me is important. And we didn't respond the right way a couple of times. You know, we tried to force it. We tried to make something happen when we didn't need to. Because, again, you know, I got a little saying that I've heard, and that is pretty much the play doesn't care who makes it. You know, the plays will be there to be made if you're where you're supposed to be.
Is not having to wait until Sunday to get back out there a good thing or a bad thing?
No, it's a good thing, I believe, because, you know, we didn't have time to dwell on it. We were able to get our points across to the guys, and now it's an opportunity for us to move forward. I mean, we'll see how it goes, how it plays out tomorrow night, you know, and again, so I tell everybody, that's why you play the game, to find out. But I really like the way we approached it. I like the way the guys are handling this week. You know, I like the way they focused, refocused, and have now put themselves in position to, you know, go out and play a good football game, hopefully.
It's only week two. You know, they're going to let you go ahead and play the other 15 regardless of what happens. I know you've said this week they're all important, and we understand that. But is there an increased urgency about this game, and if so, why?
Well, the real increase, more so than anything else, is because and that's pretty much a divisional game. I mean, you know, this is a rival team. This is a team, you know, that last year, you know, pushed us. And so we have to, if anything, go out and do the same thing. We got to go out and we've got to challenge these guys. We got to go out and get after these guys and see what happens.
We're talking to the head coach, Ron Rivera, Washington and New York, right here on your flagship home for Washington football, the Team 980, kickoff at 8:20. What gives you confidence that Taylor Heinicke will have success?
I think a big part of it is how he connects so well with his teammates, the way they rally around him. I think that's pretty cool. I really do. I think that's, you know, that's a neat thing.
What specifically about his game, beyond the leadership and the connection, are you confident about?
I think in the way he plays the game. He plays the game all out. You know, he doesn't like to lose. He does everything he can to give himself and his team an opportunity to succeed.
There are guys, and you've been around them, this is what you do, that, you know, we refer to as gamers, ballers, guys that seem to be, you know, comfortable and they never get rattled. That's what I think a lot of us see when we watch him. Is that a fair description?
Yes, I think it is. I think that's fair.
Does the short week limit what you can do with him or not, Ron? I mean, it's a short week.
No.
It doesn't.
No, Kevin, No, you know, he first of all, he's been in the system before. You know, at one point he was with Scott Turner and North Turner when they were both in Minnesota.
Right.
Then we had him down in Carolina with us, and now this is going into a second season with us here with Washington football team, and so he knows and understands and gets what we're doing. So it's not going to limit what we do. It's pretty much, you know, Scott will call the offense as he sees fit. You know, he's installed what he believes and what the coaches believe give us a chance to succeed against these guys. So that's really how we look at it. I mean, we're not limiting anything that he can do because, you know, like I said, he's a very bright football player.
What do you guys see in the Giant defense? What kind of challenges do they pose?
Oh, they're physical and stout at the point of attack. I mean, you know, with Williams up front, he's a guy that just, you know, to me, he's a challenge. You know, I like who their secondary is. They've done a lot of revamping the last two seasons. They've got a lot of good football players on that group. So it's, you know, that's the kind of challenges that you're going to have to deal with and work through. And, you know, the biggest thing we have to do is just be very consistent, you know, take what's given to us. We can't force anything, you know, whether we're running the ball, whether we're running routes, or whether we're throwing the ball. We have to be disciplined.
I would imagine third down defense is a priority.
Well, it is in light of what happened last week. But the thing everybody got to understand, though, you know, those third downs, those were shorts.
They were short.
Mediums, you know, yeah. Third and shorts. And the truth of the matter is that means we got to be better on first and second down.
Right.
And that's the truth of the matter. You know, you want to get them into third and long. So the truth is we have to do that. I mean, we weren't as good as we needed to be in the first and second down situations.
You know, you mentioned last year, before ever coaching in a game, shortly after you took the job, that when you were with the Panthers, that you and the Panthers had a first-round grade on Dwayne Haskins. Do you remember what kind of grade you had on Daniel Jones?
I think we had somewhere in the first, second round as well. You know, I think the thing, you know, again, you go back and look at, you know, as you break guys down and you look at what you got, you know, like in Dwayne's case, you know, Dwayne's got an NFL arm. You watch Daniel and you see his base fundamentals. You see the things that he did when he was at Duke and the success they had with him at quarterback. And you see some things that tell you this young man's got an opportunity. He's got a chance. And, you know, and we'll see. I mean, again, it's not just the thing everybody's going to send to. It's not just about the player, but who's around the player. How young are those people? How young is the player? I mean, there's so much that goes into it, and nobody really knows. And the one unfortunate thing for us in this business and in professional sports is, you know, everybody realizes or believes that hindsight is 20/20. I mean, you never know until the actual time comes.
So, you know, up there and NFL fans everywhere are, you know, either, as you said, you know, it's like they're way too certain about him. He's one of those guys that they have definitive opinions about. What do you make of his first two years and a half?
I think it's about growth and development. I mean, you know, it's amazing how this league has changed so much that now all of a sudden first and second rounders, even third rounders in some cases, have to be on the field. You got to put them out there. Oh, you're wasting your pick. You could have got this guy. When I was drafted, when I came out, for the most part, unless you were a top 10 draft pick, the expectation of you getting on the field, even though you might have been a first rounder, isn't at least for a year. You know, I can remember guys, you know, having to sit and watch and get developed. I mean, look at Aaron Rodgers. I mean, for as great as he is, remember, he had to sit a little bit. And then he finally got his chance. But he, no pressure, he got an opportunity to learn and grow and become who he is today. And that's the hard part for these young quarterbacks is that everybody expects it now. And fair or not, I get the expectations because, you know, the player gets drafted in the first or second round, the player makes a gazillion dollars, and that's what everybody's judging him off of, you know. But there's so much to be developed, so much to be grown. I mean, a lot of these guys are coming out of college early. A lot of these guys are going into college early now. You know, we got high school quarterbacks now that are going into spring ball before they go through their senior, they finish their senior year because they have enough credits to graduate. Right. They want to get into college so quickly. And then, you know, and then 3 years later, they're all, you know, coming out in the draft before they're completely and fully developed. I mean, very few guys are coming out ready to play. Especially at the quarterback position, the most important position on the field. And so you have to be right, because if you're not right, you know, it's on you, and, you know, it puts a lot of pressure on the young man. I think right now, you know, we've got to take a step back and reevaluate that whole situation, because there's a lot of good young players that I think are going to fall to the wayside only because they haven't had a chance to mature. And again, I think back, you know, 25, 30 years ago, and look at how and I know, you know, Kevin, I know you remember those days. Guys didn't get on the field right away. No. Guys didn't you know, get drafted. I mean, maybe the first, second, or third draft pick, maybe. But other than that, most guys had time to develop, time to grow, and become who they are. And it's, you know, it's a tough thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could make the case that for quarterbacks, prime years don't even start until they're 30 now. And Ryan Fitzpatrick made some comments a few weeks ago about he really didn't even start to really figure this thing out until just a few years ago. So it really is way too early to jump ship on that position in particular when they're young. That's what makes what Justin Herbert's looked like in the first, you know, 15, 16 starts of his career look so promising, right?
No, absolutely. But, you know, again, he's one of those, to me, he's one of those exceptions. And again, I just kind of fall back to my experience of, you know, this is my 35th year in the league. I mean, so I kind of fall back on my experiences from the first third of my career, you know, when very few young guys came in and made that kind of an impact.
Yeah.
You know, but those that did, they were special. you know. But that was just the way it was.
So last year in the game in the Meadowlands, you went for two, and you said that's what you do on the road. You kick it home. If you score late in this one, and it's, you know, it's 21-20, are you kicking and going to overtime, or are you going for two?
We'll see. Again, to me, it's going to have a little bit to do with momentum. It's going to have a little bit to do with, you know, the way we're playing offensively, the way they're playing defensively, and vice versa. I mean, you know, each game has its own personality. Yeah. It really does. You know, last year, my thought process, you know, was also we had to learn how to win. And so I just show, you know, I show the guys that I talk about winning, then why am I going for a tie? I wanted to win that game in the worst way. And I thought, why not? We had a little momentum. We just had something nice happen to us. It's at the very end of the game. How many times are we going to get down to the 2-yard line? You know, let's you know, why not take the chance now? Why wait for a coin toss? You know, why wait to see something else? This to me was a defining moment in terms of our opportunity to grow and understand what it takes to win.
Kyle played pretty well that day, with the exception of the turnover late. How is he doing?
He's doing well. He really is. You know. Having come back from the ankle surgery and the tweaked ankle he got during OTAs, during training camp, he really looks good. He's throwing the ball well. He's standing tall in the pocket. Again, he has a good command of what we're doing. So, you know, if anything were to happen, he's ready to play. So I feel very comfortable about where we are and going into things, you know. Had an opportunity to see Fitz today. He looked good in terms of, his, you know, starting his rehab program, and we'll see what happens.
Last question for you. I'm just curious, at home in that stadium, good weather, no wind, what's Dustin Hopkins' range on field goals?
Oh, gosh. Well, I can tell you this. During warm-ups on Sunday, he hit a 60-yarder. And, you know, so, and that was a fairly calm day last Sunday. So, you know, he's got the leg strength. He's got the ability. And obviously the further back he gets, the lower the percentages come. But with me, to him, the biggest thing is, you know, is he just got to continue to work on his stroke. I mean, he was 3 for 4 in terms of kicks. He did a nice job giving himself, you know, an opportunity to split the uprights. But, you know, that last one, I think he tried to put a little something extra in it because it was a little bit longer. And because of it, I think it threw his timing off a little bit. But, you know, he's got a more than good enough leg. He really does.
Yeah, I think we've seen in recent years, you know, coaches much more willing to attempt much longer field goals because the percentages of those have gone up, especially, you know, indoors we've seen it. You know, how aggressive will you be? Do you consider, you know, once you cross, you know, say the once you get to the other team's 40-yard line, that, you know, you should come away with no less than 3 or at least an attempt at 3?
Well, I think to me, my number is the 35. You know, I look at the 35 as a realistic, fair opportunity. If I ask the kicker to try anything over, you know, at 40 yards, I honestly, at that point, I'm not being fair to him. So to me, it's the 35 is really the fair spot.
Wish you the best of luck. It would be a good one to get with the long, you know, sort of mini bye before going to Buffalo. Hope you bounce back in a nice way. Thanks for spending time with me as always.
No, I appreciate it.
That was Ron Rivera. We recorded that yesterday. They got a game today, and he will be our guest consistently now moving forward the rest of the year on Friday mornings at 8 a.m. We'll get our predictions. Brendan and I will have predictions on tonight's game a little bit later on this hour before the end of the show. Up next, Paul Charchian talking fantasy football. Some big decisions to make, and I wonder if there's any big decisions to make on tonight's game. You'll hear that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Game day. Last Thursday night game Washington played was in the hometown of our next guest, the Twin Cities, where Dwayne Haskins came off the bench. They lost to the Vikings 19-9. Thriller in Minneapolis. That was it. Haskins got the start moving forward after that night. By the way, Washington and New York tonight right here on the Team 980, presented by Bud Light for the fans on game day. The official pregame show starts at 6, kickoff at 8:20. Paul Charchian is our guest each Thursday at this time to talk fantasy football. So you've got two teams that didn't generate much offensively in their openers. Is there anything that you would recommend for tonight's game? Do we have Charch?
These are two.
Oh, it's Charch. Yep. I just got you in. Start your answer again.
Okay,
I missed
it. No, it's okay.
We got that issue with the phone lines again. We got to put him on hold. We'll tee him up again. We had the ball on the tee and it just sort of fell off right before we swung. Got to put it back on the tee again. That happened with Ben Standing back-to-back weeks, and actually Ben sounded better with that little glitch. We'll get Charch back on. Lots of questions this week, you know, off of week one. And I wonder whether or not, like with bettors, where week one tends to be a major head fake, can be major fool's gold, if the same applies in fantasy. Do we have Charch?
Hi.
Charch, you there?
Yeah, how's this sound?
There we
Are
go.
Are we better?
That's my All guy. Right. That's a much better All right. sounding Paul Charchian, who, of course, you can follow on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. All right, tonight, anything that interests you off of those two week one performances offensively by the Giants in Washington?
I like both team defenses. I mean, if you're in a league that plays that, I like both opportunities there. But there are still a handful of players I like, really two, and they're both on your squad. Antonio Gibson's my 10th-ranked running back, played 65% of your team's snaps last week. It was the only back to catch a pass. I mean, I'm curious your thoughts on this. Is J.D. McKissic sort of phased out of the pass catching role that he had last year? Because, you know, we didn't get a lot of passing from the quarterback position to the running back at all, but he got none. And so, you know, maybe that's a trend. And then the Giants allowed the 5th most receptions to running backs last season. And they just gave up 6 yards per carry to the Broncos. So, I still like Gibson here, but I am curious about what you think about the pass catching distribution for your running backs. What do you think?
Well, the big thing, Charch, with Washington last week, they just didn't have the ball much. You know, they ran 49 offensive plays that counted. I think there were 6 offensive penalties, and the Chargers had 81 snaps. So that was the real thing with Washington offensively. McKissic ended up, if my recollection is right, you know, he was in on 40% of the snaps, I think. Gibson, you know, more than that. But I still think that they'll throw to the backs. And I think Curtis Samuel, obviously, with him out, I still think McKissic would be an option. I just don't – last week was a bit of an aberration. They just couldn't get off the field defensively.
Right, right, which makes some sense. Then there's Terry McLaurin, who we're always going to start. I mean, he's gotten to where he is now, acknowledged as one of the greats with, you know, guys like Alex Smith and Kyle Allen and Dwayne Haskins, who you mentioned. And so, you know, wobbly quarterbacking is not necessarily an impediment for him. In his two games against the Giants last year, he averaged 7 catches and 94 yards. So, you know, we'll take that. That'd be a fine opportunity. So got him in. And if you're in a 2-quarterback league, I like Heinicke just because of the scrambling. And, you know, he's not Michael Vick, but, you know, he does generate some yardage, mostly on broken plays. And that's fine, too. And, you know, we'll take a little bit of that. I see a 1-2 touchdown passing game coming, and he probably chips in 30, 40 yards. And as a second quarterback, that feels like a startable number.
What is historically for you week one in fantasy football? Is it the head fake that it tends to be in terms of results and betting for sure? What does week one tell you?
I'm so glad you asked that, because we roll into us fans. We roll into a season in our minds thinking what we saw last year is what's going to happen this year. And if you look, for example, the betting public was wrong on 12 of the favorites lost in week one. because, you know, the betting favorites, we're just replaying last year. Even though, you know, Kevin, we know every year's different. We know it, but we can't stop ourselves from just assuming what we saw last year is going to happen this year. And then week one comes and we go, oh, this is the real insert team here, right? This is the real Bears. It's this version right here in week one. And it, because we, our sample size is one game, we tend to put all of this weight on week one, and we tend to think week one is, oh, well, this is really the 2020 Jaguars. Okay, now we really get who they are. But really, that's also just a one-game sample size. And so people get messed up by week one by thinking that that is now, you know, what this team is for, like, the whole season. And people imprint in their mind week one so heavily, way more than any other week of the whole year in terms of figuring out who a player is or who a team is. And you have to be really conscious to not fall into that trap. And that's the trap of week one, is thinking that you really know what a player or a league or a situation is like, when really our sample size is incredibly small. And by week two, many things will have changed.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, especially just as we view the league in general, year to year, week to week, et cetera. Paul Charchian joining us. One of the things we do know is that Kyle Shanahan wants to run the football, and they lost Raheem Mostert. Elijah Mitchell was, I think, the top waiver ad this week in fantasy. What kind of production are you expecting out of him? And what about Trey Sermon? When's he going to get involved in that running game?
All right, Trey Sermon was the third round pick who everybody expected to at least be active in week one. When he was an inactive, it was a shocker. There were people that had Trey Sermon in their starting lineup because they figured Raheem Mostert would be good for some yards and carries against the Lions. And then in mop-up duty, Trey Sermon would come in and have a big game. As it turned out, he wasn't even active. And when the game ended, Kyle Shanahan basically just said, look, this is, you know, we put these guys in order of talent and who's produced the best for us. And Trey Sermon, what didn't make the cut. But now with Mostert hurt, Trey Sermon's going to be active this week. And, you know, the presumption is we're going to go right back to Kyle Shanahan doing what he loves to do, mess with us fantasy owners by using an inexplicable rotation of backs. And while it was great to see Elijah Mitchell get the 19 carries for 100 yards and the touchdown, and he looked pretty good doing it, there's no guarantee going forward that it's gonna play out that way this coming week. And the assumption is it'll be much more of a rotation now, and that Trey Sermon's gonna hit the field, and that'll give him an opportunity to shine and further muddy the waters in San Francisco.
What other players off of week one were major waiver ads this week? What about the kid in Baltimore, Tyson Williams?
Yeah, it largely rostered, but he had a fascinating journey as well, because Williams, everybody jumped on him after the two horrible ACL injuries for Baltimore. Everybody jumps on Williams. He has the big touchdown run on Monday Night Football. And then his pass blocking so bad, they basically benched him for the second half, and it was all Latavius Murray. So this one is really up in flux as to whether or not he's going to end up being somebody that ultimately ends up being a contributor or not. A couple other waiver wire guys that if they should have been picked up, if they weren't, if Jameis Winston had five touchdown passes, which looked great, and he was available in about half of leagues. Derek Carr was available in 70% of leagues. He finished with the most passing yards in the league through week one. So those were a couple of guys that were pretty hot waiver wire pickups.
Yeah. We're talking to Paul Charchian. Paul, of course, one of the fantasy experts in our country. And you can follow him at Paul Charchian. You know, I'm curious, you know, I've asked you this before, but when you go into a weekend, you are trying to identify too in your own mind, right, which games you think could end in a shootout, you know, in a high scoring back and forth game like the San Francisco Detroit game from last week. Do you have any in mind this week?
Chicago Cincinnati has got many of the trappings of a high scoring game, and I don't know what the Vegas over under line is. It's not really my thing, but
yeah,
45. That's it. Okay, well, I would go over. Numerous positive matchups here. I think people are a little slow to realize just how bad the Chicago defense is, and their secondary in particular. They don't get pressure on the quarterback like they used to. And man, their cornerbacks are garbage. Their slot cornerback last week, a guy named Marquis Christian, playing his first NFL start, gave up a perfect passer rating in his coverage. 108 yards, 7 catches and a touchdown to Cooper Kupp. And he might not even be the worst cornerback in that they've got. So to me, this is a very strong opportunity for points from the Bengals side. Again, because I don't think Chicago is nearly as good as people think. And we saw a struggling Vikings offense find its way to 24 points against Cincinnati last week, too. So I think Chicago ends up covering there, too.
Talking to Paul Charchian. If you're looking ahead to the rest of the year, are there any guys on the waiver wire like worth a speculative add in deeper
yes.
leagues right now?
Yes. I believe that quietly the number two running back for the team you guys saw last week is Larry Roundtree. Mm. And, you know, you'd got a couple of looks at him last Sunday, but he's the rookie running back behind Austin Eckler, who to me looks better than the other guys that they've got. And so I've got him as a speculative guy that I'm holding on to. Another storyline we saw emerge, if you're with me in getting increasingly pessimistic about Odell Beckham's situation with his knee, Anthony Schwartz, their rookie speedster receiver, got a lot of work last week. And this is a team that needs speed at the wide receiver position. He's the only guy who really brings that. For whatever other qualities they've got, the receivers, they don't have field stretching speed. Anthony Schwartz brings that. So that's another guy that I've picked up. And then we mentioned some weirdness with the 49ers. How about Brandon Ayuk, who was fantastic last year as he wasn't scratched, but didn't get a single target. He was on the field for 15 plays because Trent Sherfield.
Kyle is very fickle.
On the depth chart.
You know, Kyle does not care about what you've done recently. I think we've seen that with him before. There are always surprising guys that end up playing and producing, and you're like, well, where did the other guy go?
Yes. The guy you know who you're thinking of right now is Dante Pettis.
Yeah.
From like 3 years ago, was a second-round pick and had a big rookie year, and everybody's like, he's going to be our starter next year. And you know, we all thought that was the case. He didn't work hard enough for Shanahan, got benched out of the gate, and in training camp he was running with the third and fourth team. Shanahan does not care what the draft capital that was used on you whatsoever, your pedigree or anything else. He is a performance-based coach, and I love that.
Give me, before we go, just give me a couple of guys going into the weekend as everybody's trying to get their lineup set. Give me a couple of guys that, you know, are on most teams that guys have that you'd sit and some guys that you'd absolutely start this week based on the matchup. You already talked about Cincinnati, so I'm sure you love Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow this week.
Yeah, I do love those guys, but I'll give you some deeper dive guys who I like. We saw Detroit yield to two different running backs last week for the 49ers. They've got the Packers. How about A.J. Dillon? Now the full number two behind Aaron Jones. Packers come in obviously embarrassed, humiliated from last week. A.J. Dillon running out what's going to be a one-sided game. I like him a lot at running back. Jimmy Garoppolo liked him last week, put together a 300-yard performance. He goes up against Philadelphia. I think that's an exploitable matchup a few different ways for him. And, you know, the beauty for Jimmy Garoppolo, he's not the greatest arm talent in the world, but all he has to do is get the ball to his guys. Debo Samuel leads the NFL in yards after catch, and George Kittle leads all tight ends in yards after catch. So, you know, just get the ball in your playmaker's hands, and Jimmy Garoppolo can do that. And then my final one, in Denver, they lost Jerry Jeudy. They're very promising second-year wide receiver. He's going to miss half the season. That gives the other receivers an opportunity. You could go Tim Patrick, who is going to be the direct replacement for Jerry Jeudy. But the savvier move is their slot receiver, K.J. Hamler.
He dropped a 60-yard touchdown pass right in his hands.
I saw that. he has a great matchup against slot cornerback Tyson Campbell, who last week allowed a completion rate of 100%, 80 yards in his coverage, and a touchdown. So we can identify these slot coverage matchups pretty easily, and KJ Hamler's got a juicy one this week.
Last one. What do you think of Philadelphia and Hurts and Sanders and Devontae Smith and Rager? I don't know where you had all these guys a week ago, but where do you have them after week one?
No, they're all higher now. I was blown away by Jalen Hurts passing, which, you know, last year he was the league's lowest completion percentage passer, like 55%.
Yeah, but very good on play action. Very high on play action. Yeah.
He had four incompletions on Sunday. Four incompletions. You know, granted, it wasn't a great opponent in Atlanta, but I don't care. A four incompletion game is a major, major change for Jalen Hurts. And it was a clinical dissection of the Falcons from a guy whose passing was nothing like that. So this is a very strong move for him. And if Jalen Hurts is going to be an effective passer, we already know the running's there. Now he's got fantasy superstar upside now, more like we've seen with guys like Kyler Murray, who can both run and pass. Josh Allen, run and pass. That's where he breaks open your scoring system. That's Jalen Hurts. He's got that possibility now.
Charch, thanks as always at Paul Charchian on Twitter. Follow him. He is the CEO, that would be the chief execution officer at the guillotineleagues.com as well. He's on KFan in Minneapolis. Ton of podcasts as well. You can find him wherever you find a podcast. We will talk next week, sir. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. See you, Kevin. Bye-bye.
Paul Charchian, everybody. Up next, our predictions for tonight. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980. Team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
Here's what's trending on the Team 980.
Washington and New York tonight on Thursday Night Football. First Thursday Night Football appearance for Washington since 2019. The last night game they played against the Giants was Thanksgiving in 2018, and they won that game 20-10. Washington is a 3 to 3.5 point favorite. Kickoff tonight is scheduled for 8:20. Our pregame show begins at 6, and it's all presented by our friends at Bud Light. Tune in for that. The Nats lost to the Marlins 8-6. An NFL injury in the division. Dallas lost defensive end Dexter Lawrence. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. DeMarcus Lawrence, excuse me. Dexter Lawrence, they'll see tonight. DeMarcus Lawrence will miss 6 to 8 weeks with a broken foot. All right, we'll get to our prediction here in a moment. John Keim put out a column this morning on the number of quarterbacks. I mean, we've done this before, all the quarterbacks that have played for Washington. The analytics people at ESPN ranked Washington's last 30 starters as Ryan Fitzpatrick on Sunday became the 31st starting quarterback since Mark Rippon left the lineup following the 1993 season, which of course was two seasons after they won the Super Bowl 30 years ago. So in ranking all of these quarterbacks using analytics, they ranked them from 30 to 1. Mark Sanchez was dead last, 30th. Taylor Heineke came in at 29. Look, he's only got one start for the team, but it was a pretty good start. But we hope that Taylor Heineke climbs this list pretty quickly. It's a good read, especially for Washington football fans, because while the analytics people handled the rankings, Keim gives his take on where they should be ranked. And there were a couple here that I think were way off. They had Brunell ranked 12th. Brunell should have been much higher on this list. I mean, John Fries, Trent Green, Todd Collins, Patrick Ramsey, Colt McCoy were all in front of Brunell. That's a joke. Brunell's leadership alone and some of the games he played in and played well in should have him higher on the list. RG3 comes in at number 3 overall. And think about it. The quarterbacks have been so bad that one season of brilliance has him as their third best quarterback since Mark Rippon left. It'd be hard to debate that because there wasn't anybody that had a season like 2012, in terms of being the dynamic thrower and runner he was. Brad Johnson came in at number 2, And Kirk Cousins is number one on this list of Washington's starters, 30 starters since Mark Rippon. I had a conversation with John about this when he was putting his list together, and I actually had Brad Johnson number one, and Keim did too. Keim said that Brad Johnson would be tops on his list. The biggest issue was that he played only 2 years and was hurt for one of them. Kirk only started for 3 years. Remember that. He set several franchise passing records, and he would be my easy number two, and I think it's debatable. But Brad Johnson was a better leader, and that 1999 season, 4,005 yards, 24 touchdowns that particular year for the second-ranked offense in the league in 1999 was probably the best overall season since Rippon's 91 year. Kirk's 2016 was brilliant, and they were so highly ranked in every offensive category. And Brad Johnson didn't have a great supporting cast necessarily or a great defense with him. Cousins, unfortunately, in that 2016 season had one of the worst defenses, one of the worst third down defenses in the history of modern football, and that really crushed that team's particular hopes. But I would put Brad Johnson at one and Kirk at two. Just for all of you expecting me to absolutely agree with Kirk, number one, which is where the analytics had him. What about you, Brendan?
I think Brunell was the only person that was off a little bit. I would have had him much higher, probably like five or six. It's tough to argue with where anybody ranked outside of Brunell is ranked. They were all terrible quarterbacks. It's kind of tough to say who's better than who because they were all awful. And it's an indictment on the franchise that Donovan McNabb is number six. So for me, it's Cousins one, Johnson two, just because he had an extra couple hundred throws with the franchise. And outside of that, it's depressing. The list is depressing. That's what it was.
It's really those two, and the list gets very depressing, except for RG3's 2012 year. By the way, the best line in this entire column was provided by Santana Moss. When talking about John Beck, who came in number 23 on the list, Cooley actually has a quote in here. Cooley says, "What I remember is he called everybody before the season and said, 'This is John Beck, your starting quarterback.' We all called each other and said, 'Is he the starting quarterback or is he just saying that?' And Cooley said, 'I didn't hate the confidence, but he panicked in games,'" Cooley said, which he did. Santana Moss said, "He thought he was going to be the guy. He sucked ass," is the quote from Santana. "I won't lie to you. I broke my hand and didn't play the final two games with him. Nothing better could have happened to me because I didn't have to play with this guy. You talk all this stuff in the offseason and then lay this egg," closed quote. All right. Prediction for tonight. We've exhausted. You can go back and use the Odyssey app and listen to our keys to the game and our projections on Taylor Heinicke. I had him 20 of 33, 212 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. Brendan, you had him. What did you have him as your box score again?
220 yards, one touchdown, zero interceptions.
My prediction on the game is Washington 19, the Giants 17, in a very hard-fought, tight, low-scoring game. Dustin Hopkins, 4 field goals, and he starts the year 7 for 8 on the year. He's 4 for 4, including a 47-yarder with under a minute to go to give him the lead, and then somehow the defense comes up with its first big stop at the end of the game, and Washington gets to 1-1. They don't cover, you'll notice. I don't have them covering tonight. I have the Giants plus the points, not a smell test pick, but I like the Giants plus, but I like Washington to thread the needle with a 19-17 win. Quickly, Brendan, go.
I have a 16-13 Washington win, low-scoring defensive battle, turn over Daniel Jones one or two times, and get out of there with a win.
Back tomorrow with the entire recap. A reminder that Mike Shanahan will be our guest on Monday at 8:20. Nikki Javala from the Washington Post will help us break it down tomorrow. Have a great rest of the day. Enjoy the game tonight, early tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. Stay tuned. Travis is up next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai.
There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.